Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. It is my honor today to talk to somebody that I actually kind of consider a bit of a hero over the past 4 years, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who was one of very few voices in the medical world that stood up to the establishment during COVID-19 and paid a price for it as well. I've talked with Dr. Bhattacharya a few times over at Relevant Radio. I'm very happy to welcome him here to the podcast because not just because I think he's fantastic on this stuff, but because there is a movement afoot to take all the things that happened wrong during the pandemic and basically cement them into policy. And I know that you and Kevin Bardash were talking about this at Real Clear Policy last week.
Yeah, so what's happening, Ed, is that the World Health Organization, which basically pushed the lockdown strategy on the world, based on a report from where they visited the Chinese government in 2020, February 2020, they came back and pushed the lockdowns. They are putting in place something called the International Health Regulations and then a new pandemic treaty that the world is going to vote on. And then I think it's just in the next couple of weeks, they're going to have a big vote in the World Health Organization, whether to adopt these international health regulations and this new pandemic treaty. And as you said, Ed, what it will do is it will cement in place this lockdown idea. It'll cement in place media manipulation, sort of control of the information environment. And during a pandemic, it'll cement in place the ability for the World Health Organization to essentially have a substantial autonomy in declaring pandemics without too much input from member states, and then to sort of push member states to do surveillance and things that will lead to lockdowns. It also puts in place this pandemic surveillance kind of apparatus, which might actually have caused the pandemic, whereby people go into the wild places, you know, bat caves of the world, and bring out viruses to do dangerous experiments on them in population centers. So I think what we have is a very substantial policy shift that will affect basically everyone on Earth. And unfortunately, we really haven't had much of a discussion around it domestically, or there's growing concern worldwide, but it's quite possible it will succeed.
Well, first off, I mean, this is just from somebody who's familiar with bureaucracies, both private sector and public sector. There is a little bit of empire building going on here. Right off the bat, you mentioned this. You and Kevin mentioned this, right? Current estimates suggest that over $31 billion a year will be needed to fund the obligations of the World Health Organization's new approach to pandemic prevention. And, you know, that to me is a lot of money for just saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't do gain of function research in places like China, if at all. That to me is feather bedding. That's sort of bureaucratic inertia expansion that we see basically in every unaccountable and unelected bureaucracy. Do you see that as certainly one argument against this?
There's absolutely an enormous argument against this. That it's cement, the way it works is the chief scientific officer of the World Health Organization is a man named Jeremy Farrar. He previously was the head of the Wellcome Trust, which funded a lot of this gain of function work, this UK organization that funded a lot of this gain of function work. And by becoming the chief scientific officer of the World Health Organization, he's managed to influence it so that even more money from American taxpayers can go to this kind of dangerous work. The other aspect of the World Health Organization that many people don't know is that the funding sources are not just, it's not just like member states, not just the United States. The Gates Foundation, for instance, funds a pretty substantial fraction of the activities of the World Health Organization. So these unaccountable bureaucracies, foundations that don't necessarily have the best interest in mind of the American people, they're going to make decisions on the basis of those funding sources. So the bureaucracy and the funding play an enormous, and as well the desire for the World Health Organization to appease Chinese bureaucrats. All of that plays a tremendous role in thinking about what the activities of the World Health Organization is going to be. I don't think they're an organization that's worthy of trust so that we should give them more power. I'm not saying we should leave them, but we should certainly not give them more power. We should use, as in America, we should use whatever leverage we have to reform them.
And Dr. Bhattacharya, the other part of this empire building that's going on is not just in terms of they need to absorb a lot more money for, you know, pandemic research and pandemic control, but also they're expanding their mission, right? They're expanding the definition of what world health means. And the definition that they are proposing now is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And this to me is an astounding power grab here. The expansion of the idea of health to somehow be the perfection of physical and mental states around the world, first off, it's unachievable, which means that the power would be limitless, but also it usurps the actual role of governments, right? Here in the United States, we have, you know, federal, state, and local governments that are supposed to be looking out for well-being. I mean, it's part of what governments do. But this is sort of a, well, it's not sort of, this is an entree to a global power grab that would necessarily make the World Health Organization more powerful in terms of policy setting than elected governments around the world.
You know, there's an irony here in this, Ed, because that definition is actually an old one. They've had that definition
for a long
time. Yeah. I mean, in a sense, it's like, you know, I mean, it's if you just look at it some as a geeky academic exercise, yeah, health is more than just your physical health. That's what it kind of means. And there's nothing per se wrong with that. The irony is that during the pandemic, they decided that health was just avoidance of a single respiratory virus. And nothing else, not the psychological harm from the lockdowns, not the incredibly expensive impact on our economies, not the huge impact on the learning of our kids, none of that, which normally, if they were following that definition, they would have said, let's never have the lockdowns. Because the harm from health, right? So the problem is that their definition of health that they have that you read is completely out of line with what they actually practice for health. For them now, health is simply the prevention of pandemics via mechanisms that very likely cause this pandemic, via research, the support of infrastructures and bureaucracies that damage the health of basically every poor person on the face of the earth. And the elevation of scientific bureaucrats to positions essentially of autocratic power, so our democratic governance basically is put underneath essentially a scientific bureaucracy that brings onto itself this idea that if you question me, you're not simply questioning a man, you're questioning science itself. I mean, that's the kind of ethos that we have at the World Health Organization.
Well, it's not just at the World Health Organization either, because we have that here in the United States. And I mean, you were one of the victims of the scientistic, and I use that term advisedly. It's not scientific, it's scientistic. It's scientism as a sort of a belief system. And its high priest was a guy named Anthony Fauci, and to disagree with him or to dissent from him was an attack on science itself. And I mean, I'm not exaggerating that, am I?
No, he literally said that to some CNN interviewer. I mean, I was absolutely stunned, right? It's one of these things where, like, you know, we religious types get accused of this kind of sort of unreasoned faith. But in fact, I've never seen, even as a religious person, I've never seen anything more unreasoned faith than in the faith that people placed in Tony Fauci. Scientism is exactly the right word. I often say thus, capital T, science, capital S, trademark. I mean, it's not actual science. Science is a beautiful thing. Like, so actual science is questioning of the world through experiment and skepticism and ideas that are checked. It's how we learn about the physical world. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. What we have instead is in its place is this utopian view that we can perfect ourselves if we just put the right scientific bureaucrats in charge. If we we can have Tony Fauci actually has this very interesting paper that he wrote a few years before the pandemic. Essentially, it's a utopia. He writes a utopia of how to reorganize our society to rid us of the possibility of disease. And to me, Ed, it reads like a dystopia, where the central organizing principle of society is that we view each other as biohazards, as primarily biohazards and nothing more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that has a fairly lengthy history in modern times. I mean, you can go back to the population bomb, Paul Ehrlich. And the idea that humanity is some sort of a virus and that the organism we should be that has priority is Earth and we are somehow an infection on Earth. And look, I mean, if you want to believe that, that's fine. But I really don't want to be governed on that basis. And this is the problem. And it's not just at the World Health Organization, although this would make it much, much worse because it would locate that problem outside the United States, where it's not accountable. But the problem is that when you allow that type of dystopia to take place, as we did during the pandemic, when we allowed, you know, bureaucrats with, you know, MDs and PhDs to dictate all of our choices because we didn't know what to do, and you don't have accountability, you don't have debate over those things, you miss the truth. You opt for bad policies. And that's exactly what happened. And it was, you know, I don't mean to ring your bell constantly during this, Dr. Bhattacharya, but it was guys like you who were trying to stand up and say, we need to have a conversation about this. We need to test these hypotheses because they're not tested yet. And that means it's not science. And you got shut down and shut down hard by the mechanism that the World Health Organization wants to put in place to control misinformation in the health space.
I mean, that's probably the most shocking part of this World Health Organization treaty and push. You're absolutely right, Ed. What happened during the pandemic was a mass scale violation of the American First Amendment. You had government officials in the name, in the guise of public health, in the guise of protecting the public from misinformation, censoring scientific debate, where the main people they censored were the people that were criticizing government scientific pronouncements, false ones. Right. So on topic after topic, is there immunity after you get COVID? Is there such a thing as herd immunity? Is there such do the vaccines stop you from getting and spreading COVID? Do the mask mandates do anything to stop the spread of COVID? Is masking toddlers a good idea? On topic after topic, I mean, does it make sense to like walk into a restaurant mask and then sit down and take your mask off and that'll stop COVID? On topic after topic after topic, the government experts silenced critics using the guise of suppressing misinformation. And what the WHO treaty does is it basically cements that in place. It tells governments everywhere that it should expand that power. It's this sort of internationalization of that suppression of power. And I don't know of anything that's more liable to abuse than the power to silence your opponents. Essentially, they used it, we had during the pandemic, you had political actor after political actor using the pandemic to further their political career. You know, Justin Trudeau wins re-election in 2021 for five more years by scaring the living daylights out of the Canadian public, right? You have President Biden who campaigned on pandemic, you know, fear mongering.
Right.
I mean, you have political power in the hands of people who in this unethical way exploited the fears of the public in order to gain political power. Essentially, the World Health Organization treaty will cement that in place, along with censorship powers that no government should have.
Right. And I mean, just on a practical basis, it's because we ended up on the wrong policies all the way along. And it wasn't as though this was some sort of mystery. Some of these policies were evidently bad right almost from the beginning. We found out very early on that COVID doesn't really impact children, for instance, and yet we were closing all the schools and forcing the kids to stay home, forcing the parents to stay home, and you know, damaging economies. That was mostly in the United States. Sweden did it differently and ended up with a lower excess death rate as a result of it. But here in the United States, everybody shut down. And then the southern states started to sort of rebel against this and start reopening, starting with Georgia. And that was during the Trump administration. And the Trump administration resisted this because they were relying on people like Deborah Birx, Anthony Fauci, Francis Collins, and the rest of the establishment that insisted that they understood this disease while admitting that it was a novel disease and they actually had no data on it yet. I mean, none of this is science, right? This is all politics. This is all about control. And at least in the United States, if we're, you know, just to talk a little bit about the World Health Organization's proposal here, if it was just contained in the United States, there are ways to hold people accountable at the ballot box, through congressional hearings. All of that goes out the window if the World Health Organization is put in charge of that, or is given jurisdiction, or trying to think of the correct word, sovereignty, I guess, over information dissemination regarding any sort of disease.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really it's interesting that the way that that our elected leaders essentially got rolled over this has to do with the tremendous power that scientists have. Scientific bureaucrats have over what during a time when everyone is scared, you know, out of their minds. The school closures are a fantastic example of this. I mean, you had Scott Atlas, my colleague Scott Atlas from Stanford, telling the president of the United States to open the schools in part because of the Swedish experience and success in spring of 2020. And then you essentially you had scientific bureaucrats like Deborah Birx and Tony Fauci suppressing Scott's voice and making sure that the president of the United States didn't hear any alternate views. I actually did get to talk with the president, Trump, in August of 2020 in the Oval Office. And it was striking. Like, I thought his instincts were to open schools, but he was scared to lose reelection, I think. It was my sense, which is why he didn't do the right thing then. I think ultimately I blame the scientific community more than almost anybody else, right? We basically failed the people by giving the people bad advice. I think one of the main reasons I'm against this World Health Organization treaty is that it cements in place the ability for a very small number, a small cartel of scientists, very powerful scientists, to speak for all scientists and do the same thing that they did again. And it's become a mechanism of a recipe for power, Ed, rather than just simply a way to protect the health of the people. The WHO doesn't deserve this kind of power. And it's abused it in the past, and it will abuse it again.
So let me posit it this way, because I agree with you about scientific bureaucrats, right, who are more interested in a grip on power than they are in actual science. And it's not everybody in science. Obviously, it didn't apply to you. You know, it didn't apply to the other people who were speaking out. But the people who managed to migrate their way into bureaucracies, you know, they have power, they have authority, and bureaucrats tend to do that. But it's not just the bureaucrats, and it's not just really the World Health Organization. It's not the scientific scientistic bureaucrats, I guess I would prefer to say. But it's also some of these foundations, and you mentioned this, right? You mentioned the Gates Foundation. There's all sorts of foundations that work in this area. Some of them are foundations set up by, you know, multi-billionaires, which is the Gates Foundation. Some of them operate on the basis of a little less transparency as to where they get their funding. But how big of a role did the foundations, these foundations, Gates and others, have in pushing forward these policies and blocking people from being able to debate and discuss them?
They played a central role, Ed, just from the very, very beginning of the pandemic on, right? So the Gates Foundation, for instance, was, I think they funded this University of Washington group that was doing pandemic forecasting in the US, which very often turned out to be incorrect. They set WHO policy on lockdowns. Bill Gates himself was the vaccine biggest spokesperson. He went out and told the public things that were not actually consistent with what the data were showing regarding the capacity of the vaccine to stop you from getting and spreading COVID. And the Gates Foundation, I think, just leave aside Bill Gates, I think broadly speaking, you really want democratic governance of these public health organizations. You fundamentally need checks and balances in place. It shouldn't be that a relatively small number of rich people can control exactly the policy that impacts the lives of billions and billions of people, the way that the Gates Foundation has been able to do on public health. I think if I'm a big proponent of public health, Ed, I think that it's very, very important that a trustworthy public health infrastructure exists and that it has in mind the health and well-being of the public constrained by democratic governance. It needs lots of eyes on it. It needs checks and balances. And really the fundamental problem of the Gates Foundation's sort of grabbing of the central reins of power of WHO is that there are no checks and balances on it. It does whatever it wants to do, sometimes very dangerous things. And they're fully on board the whole, you know, let's stop misinformation by censoring Jay kind of thing.
Yeah. Censoring Jay, censoring us.
Yeah. Censoring you, Ed. I mean, it's really striking. And it's a very obviously political, right? It's you know, the things that they do tend to benefit left-wing politicians. I just say there are some excellent left-wing politicians who I think did a great job during the pandemic, especially in Sweden.
Right. Yeah.
But so I don't think
they were conservatives.
Logical, but
and they were just smart, right? I mean, they took a look at this and they looked at the data that they had and they said, well, we actually think it's probably smarter to just stay open and just try to mitigate things as it goes along, because it looks like this is something that greatly impacts people who are already morbidly ill, and everybody else should be able to get their way through it. And that was also available from the data fairly early on. Now, I mean, it wasn't available maybe in March of 2020, but by about May of 2020, It became pretty clear that that was the case, as well as data from the UK showing that children were not getting it and they weren't spreading it either. I mean, those were two key findings that really should have informed what was going on throughout the rest of that pandemic. And yet, there's two other things I want to talk about here. One is something you bring up at the end of this, which is the fact that the countries haven't even had an honest assessment of what these approaches did. So you can't really just say, well, let's centralize it at the World Health Organization when we may be passing along not best practices, but worst practices. That's one aspect of this. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, because it is something that you bring up here, is that there's really been no accountability for this.
You remember after the Challenger disaster in 1986, I think it was.
Oh, yeah. My father worked in the space program. I was very close to that. Yes. Okay,
so, I mean, that was a formative moment for me. I was in high school. It was just a shock to see it happen. But then what happened was that there was a congressional inquiry. And very famously, Richard Feynman, the Nobel Prize winning physicist, he comes into the congressional inquiry and, you know, he's the consummate scientist. He must have done this experiment before he does this. He's also a showman. He has a cup of ice water and he has this O-ring that was in the Challenger that had like sealed off some compartment, and he dips the O-ring in the water and then he shatters it or something. And it's like, that's what caused the disaster. This O-ring froze and it's brittle when it froze. The purpose of that wasn't to blame any single individual. The purpose was to understand what had gone wrong,
right,
and then to reform so that same similar kind of thing, so the process would be in place to prevent that kind of disaster from happening again. That's what happened during the pandemic. It was that on steroids. It was to use a different analogy. If you believe in the lab leak idea, this was a Chinese American Chernobyl.
Yes.
So we have to take that seriously. Like, and the serious thing to do is to do an honest inquiry about what was the origins of the virus, what were the lockdowns necessary, what harms were done, were civil liberties violated, to what extent did public health, what did they know when, and what, you know, did they act appropriately, what oversight can we change, oversight mechanisms can we put in place so that the same kind of thing never happens again. We need a Challenger disaster kind of inquiry. We need an honest COVID inquiry. And we've not had that anywhere in the United States, UK. I think in Denmark, I saw something that was like they admitted that closing schools was a mistake. There's a few places, but we don't have a comprehensive one, certainly not one worldwide. And to give the WHO power without having done that is really, really irresponsible.
Extremely. That was exactly the word that I was going to come up with. Now, look, I'm apparently a little older than you, you whippersnapper. I was in my 20s when the Challenger disaster happened. So, so turn down your radio and get off my darned lawn, Dr. Bhattacharya. Anyway, you know, my father worked on the space program. I actually interviewed my dad, who's thankfully still with us. I interviewed my dad several years ago about this because he worked on the space shuttle program. He was around for Apollo. He was in the Gemini program as well as Apollo for the Apollo 1 disaster, which also had a what used to be called a red team review or a tiger team review. But I mean, it was a full on comprehensive, everybody has to say everything sort of look at what happened so you could fix the program. You could fix the problems and go on with the program. You know, in Apollo 1, it was sort of understood that we were going to go on with the program with the shuttle. But, you know, the Apollo 1 disaster, we weren't sure. They weren't sure that they were going to be allowed to continue with that because it had been such a shocking disaster to lose, you know, three astronauts on the pad for just a plugs out test, you know. And it took that kind of brutal honesty to give people confidence that the system is working the way it's supposed to. And yes, you're going to have accidents. These things are going to happen. People are unfortunately going to die in exploration of space, just like humans have died in exploration of anything else. But the mission is still solid, and you can have confidence in the process by which we're doing this to minimize risks to the greatest extent possible. That's the piece that's missing here. And I think signing a treaty that assigns that to the World Health Organization is not going to improve matters when it comes to confidence, especially considering how close the World Health Organization was with China in covering up the not just the potential, but the likelihood that this came from the gain of function research at the Wuhan facility where the pandemic originated, and where they were working on precisely this kind of manipulation of viruses, of coronaviruses. That to me is what the issue is here. There is no confidence now that this is actually scientific, a rigorous scientific enterprise. It looks, it has all the hallmarks of a bureaucratic mission to exclude people from the process as much as possible and exclude outside scrutiny from it.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it looks like to me. I've been in conversation with some members of parliament from Uganda, from Kenya, from Peru and elsewhere. And what they tell me is that the WHO treaty, like the way that the WHO acted during the pandemic, they view this WHO treaty as a sort of a neo-colonial expansion. Essentially, one of the major parts of this treaty is to is to expand the surveillance infrastructure in these poor countries. But you know what the risk is, Ed? Like, think what happened in South Africa in late 2021. A South African scientist, an excellent scientist, discovers the Omicron variant. She announces it to the world. It's very, very clear, if you're an epidemiologist, that it's not just in South Africa. Like, if you have it, if it's emerging in South Africa, it's going to be emerging everywhere. And in fact, within days, you had reports of it found in Italy, in the United States, in the UK. But what happened next was the whole world ended travel from South Africa, to and from South Africa, crushing the economy for no good reason, for a virus that was already everywhere, a variant that was already everywhere. And so the development of an infrastructure to try to identify these viruses as they emerge will be used against these countries, even if it has no benefit to the world.
Right.
How a lot of the global South is looking at this now. It's essentially a power grab of the global North, of the global South.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, Dr. Bhattacharya. Now, you know, I want to wrap up on where you think this is going here in the U.S. with the Biden administration, and then it has to get through a Senate if it's going to have any weight at all. Where is this going? I know that you're probably talking to members of Congress about this, or at least people in Washington, D.C., some of the decision makers there. Where do you see this heading?
It's interesting. I just saw a letter from 49 senators, Republican senators, who wrote and said, you have to treat this like a WHO treaty, like a treaty, which actually stunned me that it was necessary to do so. But I guess we now have even just a recent history, you had treaties that were not treated like treaties during the Obama administration, right?
Well, the Iran nuclear deal, right?
Yeah, the Iran nuclear
deal. There was a presidential memo of understanding, and it has no legal weight, which is a reason why Trump could just void it when he got into office. Yeah, treaty is supposed to, international treaties are supposed to receive 2/3 of the Senate in order to have the effect of law on the United States. And so if they're not going to do that, then, I mean, technically speaking, there really isn't a treaty there. It's just up to each administration what they want to do with the World Health Organization.
So I think in the United States, if those 49 senators hang together, this won't, and it is treated as a treaty, then this won't be ratified by the United States. It is sad to me that it's a partisan issue, right? Because I don't think Democrats benefited from the lockdowns. Their children were hurt. Their businesses were closed. Their churches and mosques and synagogues were closed. They were subject to the same kind of psychological terror that the lockdown regime put in place. The Democrats were not benefited by the support for dangerous pandemic viral research that may have caused the pandemic. It should be basically every senator, Republican or Democrat, that demands that this World Health Organization treaty be subject to real vigorous debate before we think anything about approving it. So I do think that there's a movement in the United States and elsewhere. Worldwide, they're starting to oppose it. Whether it's enough or not, it's hard for me to say right at the moment.
Well, I think it's something we should keep in mind for the next election too. But we need to keep the pressure on in other ways. I mean, we're almost out of time here. I haven't even given you a chance to let people know where they can find you, Dr. Bhattacharya.
Oh, well, so Ed, thank you for that. So I have a new podcast, not as professionally done as yours, Ed, but, we're trying.
I don't know about that.
it's called The Illusion of Consensus. So if you type my name, JAYBHATTACHARYA, every third letter is an A, and then you type in Illusion of Consensus, you'll find us. It's with this journalist, Rav Arora, who's a fantastic young man in British Columbia. And then I'm also, my wife says, too involved in Twitter. But you can find me in Twitter at Dr. J. Bhattacharya.
You're not on Instagram, are you?
No, I'm not.
Stay off of Instagram. I am losing hours of my life from doom scrolling on Instagram. So
no.
Twitter is good enough. The Twitter is good enough. And check out the podcast, folks. Dr. J. Bhattacharya, thank you so much for joining us today. A pleasure talking to you again, sir, and I hope we get a chance to do this a little bit more often.
Likewise, Ed. So good to talk with you.